The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
I am not mentally prepared for him to start the year. I am not. You tell Nick, I am not mentally prepared for that. There's no mental preparation for that. I will think I have died and gone straight to hell if Dylan Gabriel starts the season this year. Erase the phrase, not trying to be mean to Dylan Gabriel. Dylan is clearly not ready, folks. If they do that, then my opinion, all this just hit the bleeps. I can't do that.
Not trying to be mean to Dylan Gabriel, but you will feel like you've died and gone straight to hell if he starts.
Because it's completely unrealistic and unfair to everyone. Listen to what came out of Nick's mouth, for crying out loud. Listen to what came out of his mouth.
I just want you to set in that.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine this? I want to think of you. How long did you listen to sports talk radio before you got in this business?
Probably 15 years.
Okay, and how long were you an intern busting your ass for two other people aren't even here?
Almost a year.
Okay, yeah. And then how long did you bust your ass before you got in with us?
Another 4 years.
Okay, and now how much do we respect your opinion, these two guys in this room?
Very little.
Very, very much, and you know that's true. We trust you implicitly 100%. What if one day we just went, hey, you know what? We just hired Anthony Allant. No offense to Anthony Allant. I'm going to use him because he's a new kid. And he might have a lot of promise. Anthony Allant does have a lot of promise. We're going to go, hey, we're passing up on you and everybody, and you're going to have to work with Anthony Allant. I think you'd go, I don't trust this kid. I do not trust this kid. Why are you putting me in a different position? Now, I know that's a very loose analogy. I am trying to find an analogy that would ever make anybody's head spin for putting somebody who might have something, probably doesn't, might have something in week one.
Yeah, but I don't know that I'd go, me and Anthony Allant, I feel like I'm in hell.
It's silly as hell. Because it is. Because it's hell. You're starting hell soon. Hell will be here. We will reach hell, I guarantee you.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubt that Browns fans will be in some sort of hell this year.
Wouldn't you like to put off hell for a little bit? Would you not? Let's start that hell now.
I don't want to be too negative, but eternal damnation, it's in play.
If Nick is feeling that way, then Nick is stoned to the bejesus on the air. No. No. Hey, let's throw everything we have at Dylan Gabriel.
I think the fans would take Huntley over Gabriel right
again,
now.
According to that, you've done everything you can to throw the kitchen sink at him, and he hasn't answered the bell once. So then he gets to start week one?
Yeah, I'm going with the Pro Bowler, Tyler Huntley.
The guy who's been in the system already, Tyler Huntley.
Boy, you certainly have a way with words, don't you? See, because, again, it leads me to the cold conversation. Like, I'm trying, when I talk about Shedeur Sanders, and 7:22, I'm going to get to last night's game, and it had a postseason feeling for more ways than one. And we might even hit Kafis corner during that. We'll see.
Oh, yes.
He came out. He played, technically. He was a pinch runner. CJ played. So, if I talk about Shedeur Sanders, right, I know I'm fighting an uphill battle. Because my whole thought of this has been, this whole process, because we got crazy conspiracy theories going around, and I got people even saying he doesn't even really have arm soreness. The Browns are just keeping him down. I go, well, hey, guys, hey, I like Shedeur Sanders a whole lot. Anybody who listens to this show and listens to this station knows that I ain't got nothing against Shedeur Sanders, and that goes back to because when I was a kid, I loved his dad. So that does play into it emotionally here. But to make a point, I'm not going to call the guy a liar in the press conference. He said what he said in the press conference. I'm going to take him for his word, right? Right. So I have this kid, this young man, who I've made arguments for, but the whole time I'm trying to say, and this is where Dylan Gabriel comes into it, I've tried to say that, hey, they're not sabotaging Shedeur on purpose. They might get there to the wrong part of what they're supposed to do because they have put the boots to themselves so many times because they don't think it all the way through, or they think too much and they don't just understand the common sense of the entire matter. So what's Dylan Gabriel got to do with that? Well, everything, because it would be just as irresponsible to put Dylan Gabriel out there. If you're going to put Dylan Gabriel out there, hell, you might as well go with Shedeur. You might as well go with anybody. Go with anybody. To start the season, that's unserious. Look yourselves in the mirror if you're going to Berea. What makes us a serious franchise today? I know you hate that term, Anthony. Oh, they're unserious. Or what makes them unserious? That would make you unserious. What you better be, he better be nails on to the point where he shuts everybody up if you're going to do something like that. And that's why it's not a conversation. And here I am trying to tell people, like, hey, you're supposed to have a guy. The entire NFL tells us that he's good with quarterbacks, our head coach. The entire NFL. People tell you left, right, and center outside of Cleveland that if you let this guy go, he's going to come back and bite you in the ass with somebody else. You better not let this guy go. He's good with QBs. He's good with offenses. And then you're going to put that guy out there. Again, if Joe Flacco were to be hurt and Kenny Pickett were to be hurt, well, I guess you got to do what you got to do. But if neither of these guys or one of these guys or only one of these guys are hurt, then what are we doing here, guys? Damn it. No. It's irresponsible for the Browns to do, and I don't believe Nick when he says it. I don't want to call Nick a liar or unrealistic, but come on. Do you believe any of that when you hear that? Dylan no. Gabriel? I mean, I'm asking them to trust a franchise to try to put their right foot forward. That's all I'm asking them to do. I don't think they're going to win a lot of games this year. I'm just saying let's do something that would tell you that you're at least trying to be stable. You've done other things that would say that not firing people, you're trying to be stable. Keeping the same core around when it comes to your front, you're trying to be stable. You've signed your veterans. You've tried to be stable. The Deshaun Watson, certainly unstable. But everything else you've tried to do, this, come on, that's insane. Dylan Gabriel, week one. Like, I'm getting nothing from the peanut, Gary, because I know you guys don't want to say anything nasty to anybody else.
No, I just feel like,
and I'm not trying to be nasty either. But Lord Almighty,
I feel like I've said my piece, and it's such a common sense, you know, way of looking at this thing.
Like, if he went out there and he struggled week one against Cincinnati, I wouldn't even be mad the next day. I would just sit there and go, "Well, you got what you wanted. Here you go." And by the way, your third round pick, you started way too soon. That you told everybody. It was almost a Hugh Jackson trust me moment all over again. Does anybody think that he would go out there and be really good against Cincinnati? Anybody at all? No, nobody does. Week one, straight from college, third round, overdrafted, boom to now. Nobody thinks he would be that. No one thinks he'd be good in that spot. And then the conversations that the Browns clearly don't want to have about Shedeur Sanders, first team rep, starting, this, that, and the other. Well, that's, by the way, you start Dylan Gabriel, that's all on the table. These whole conversations that you don't want to have that we consider to be irresponsible about putting Shedeur Sanders in a bad spot, that's all there. Because I think Shedeur Sanders has a higher ceiling. Do you think Shedeur Sanders has a higher ceiling?
That's something we've agreed on, and that's why I said the only guy I really care about in all this setup is Shedeur Sanders. That's why I wanted to see him.
If we're just going to play rookies, I might as well just play the guy with the higher ceiling, because, hell, it doesn't matter anymore. You don't. No. He ain't. No. Nick on the road. You're next up on the fan. Hello.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I got a quick question. I was going to say something else, but you said something, Ken, that kind of generated a different question.
Uh-oh. What's that?
If Kevin Stefanski is so good with quarterbacks, why don't we have a damn quarterback? If he's so good.
Well, you can do. I can be a hell of a coach, but if that horse won't drink that water, then what am I going to do?
Yeah, I mean,
over again, it's the quarterback. So even though the coach is good with quarterbacks, the quarterback is the one that fizzles out. It's definitely not.
No, because Baker Mayfield's a really good quarterback.
You're damn right.
You're damn right. So that's a knock against Kevin Stefanski, no matter how I want to try to spin that. Yes, that's a knock.
I'm going to make you puke a little more. Does this feel at all like Hoyer Manziel all over again? Like Flacco's going to go out and go 6-3, and he's going to hurt his pinky
And you know what? Are you talking about Dylan or Shedeur or both?
Who cares? One of them. I mean,
I'm gonna tell you why it's not
a friggin' train wreck.
Nick, I know you're mad, and I'm not too very thrilled myself this morning. But let me tell you why it's not.
Nick Hoyer has the fifth highest Browns quarterback winning percentage.
I know you're not trying to be
in the history of the organization.
I know you're not trying to be nasty to the two young men. You're trying to be. You're not very thrilled with the Browns right now. But it's just such a sincere insult to ever have any sort of comparison to Johnny Manziel between Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders.
I think that's fair, but we'll see.
Yeah. Like, they might not get there, and thank you for the call, Nick. Like, what can I say about Manziel that hasn't already been said 800 times before? On the internet, in Cleveland, whatever. We know the guy's a loser. We know the guy never gave himself a chance to be an NFL quarterback. We know that he sabotaged himself. We know that he continues to blame others for the problems that he had in the NFL. He's a goof. He goes on podcasts. I don't need to care about that guy anymore. I'm not gonna tear down Shedeur Sanders. And I know that that's not what necessarily Nick's trying to do. I just have to correct everybody. This is nowhere near that situation. Because when Shedeur Sanders does get a chance, we know, if we know anything, we know he's probably a little bit further behind than we want to admit. Because if they're bringing in Tyler Huntley here, you definitely want a half of Tyler to take in. But you also know that maybe without the first team reps yesterday, with some of the injuries there that you've had with the quarterback position, they just believe Shedeur is still a little further behind than what we all wish he was. But I also know that Shedeur Sanders and Dillon Gabriel, for that matter, even though I just went crazy on that tangent about him starting week one, because it's nuts to do. It's absolutely nuts to do. They would work their ass off to try to be a good quarterback in the NFL. The other guy didn't. The other guy is a walking punchline in so many ways.
The Huntley part of it is just that they have no plans, no designs of Joe Flacco in this game, right? Even though Bryce Young is playing. There's a whole reason Carolina didn't play him last year, and then he struggled mightily to start out. So no Flacco, and now no Pickett, no Dillon Gabriel. Those guys are all probably out.
I would imagine, because you've got two guys with hamstring injuries, and Joe's 40 years old. I don't want to have it. Nothing can. I trust Joe.
They're kind of in an emergency quarterback situation for this preseason game.
They started the season with four.
And what offensive lineman are they going to trot out there?
Well,
is Wyatt Teller going to play in this game? Is Joel Bitonio going to play in this game?
John Greco joins us at 8:02. He's still in really good shape. Zach Zinterg will play at some point there, right? Well, you seem thrilled.
What about the arm soreness of Shedeur? Is that a reason to believe he might not play in this game?
More of that coming up in about last night, that's for sure. Gardo's won last night. Do I ask what might be on some people's mind now, or do I wait after Kafis Corner?
I do know something's been grinding your gears all morning, Kenny.
A little bit. There's been two things Guardians related that's been grinding my gears.
What did the manager screw up in this game?
I don't know if the manager screwed anything up. I think it's a... I just had this thought when I heard after they won last night. There's Steven Vogt on the big victory and how the Guardians, they just refuse to quit.
Our guys never quit. That's one thing I love about this group. I'm so proud of them. They never quit regardless. Our back end of our bullpen doesn't give up runs very often. So, but they didn't get down. They stayed up, and a little guards ball chaos there to get it going.
Guards ball chaos.
He's a good guy.
In the Big Apple.
I don't believe he's completely overmatched. I think he's a good manager. There's definitely things that they have to work out. No manager's perfect, clearly. No manager's perfect. But when I saw Hunter Gaddis out there in the eighth inning, I mean, the moment they showed him on TV, I go, oh boy. You had that stealing feeling. And I think at times, Owen brought this up. Owen, you said it felt like a playoff atmosphere in Queens last night. Did you not?
Oh, yeah.
Loud crowd, boisterous crowd there. And I think there's times, because this goes back to the postseason, where Steven tends to overmanage a little bit. I know he knows he does not have that talented of a ball club. The Mets are supposed to get what they pay for. Everybody goes through swoons. We're seeing what the Yankees are doing right now. But I know that he knows he has to try to help them get there. But I think at times he's pushing too many buttons. Because I think a lot of people did not like seeing Hunter Gaddis out there, and they would have rather had Cade Smith or somebody else out there than Hunter Gaddis at that moment. I'm just saying. Not that I want him gone or anything like that. I like Steven Vogt.
I mean, Cade's kind of the closer right now, right?
He is kind of the closer.
Hunter would be the setup man, right?
Did you want Hunter Gaddis in that spot? Because not a lot of people did.
Yeah, that's where he's supposed to be.
Okay.
That's where he's supposed to be. It didn't work out. It was also against Francisco Lindor, Juan Soto, and Pete Alonso.
So I can't trust a major league pitcher against major league
hitters? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it was the eighth inning and the setup man came out in a setup situation.
Okay. Well, I think a lot of people would have rather had somebody else.
So you would have rather ran the closer out in the eighth inning?
Because he did go
two innings with Cade Smith. Can't go two innings with Cade Smith?
Well, you got him in the closer role.
But then you're not pitching him tonight.
You ended up having to put him out there with He had to go finish out the eighth inning.
So are you saying
made a great play before that, and then he went and threw a couple pitches and got out of the inning?
I think Hunter Gaddis was way off last night, and I think I would have rather just had Cade Smith out there.
So sounds like you're just done with Hunter Gaddis in general, then, which that they can't be done with him.
No,
they have
Hold on. I don't think he's a setup guy. I think he's middle relief. That type of pressure, I don't think Hunter Gaddis responds well to. That was real pressure last night. Yet Slade Ciccone pitched well through six innings, things get wonky. That is a good lineup.
But over the last two seasons, they've used Hunter more in the setup role than they did Cade Smith even. Cade Smith was the stopper.
I understand.
Cade Smith came in, sixth inning whenever things were starting to get out away from you.
Understood. And I have I had a 5-0 lead that turned into a 5-3 lead. I guess I have to stop the New York Mets. Because don't you tell me you saw Hunter Gaddis and you thought, as things started to unravel.
After the third hit, I started to feel a little uneasy. I didn't feel uneasy before the inning started, no.
I did feel uneasy before the inning started.
I'm glad that you had that premonition.
Just seeing Hunter Gaddis in high leverage situations with a lot of things on the line, I don't tend to
send his ass back to Columbus.
I just wonder I didn't say that either.
That never came out of my mouth.
Let's get Tim Herron back up here.
Did last year's bullpen, the Guardians have had some like all-time, but last year's bullpen was an all-time bullpen in the regular season.
Right.
We knew there was going to be some regression. Yeah. I mean, you had four guys.
One of those guys will never play in baseball.
We had four guys that were unhittable. Four guys that were unhittable in the regular season. This is a little bit more normal. I mean, where Hunter Gaddis is right now is ERAs at like 3.5?
Yeah.
I mean, that's closer to what you would expect.
By my experience, whether it be in a Mets uniform or a Yankees uniform for that matter, Juan Soto has very much enjoyed Hunter Gaddis's pitching. Don't know if I'd have rolled Hunter Gaddis out there against that group.
All right, you got to tell us each game now, the rest of the season, if it was good time to put in Hunter Gaddis or a bad time to put in Hunter Gaddis.
My God in heaven, does everything have to be this?
Well, I want to make sure because
we'll do 4 hours of revisiting. We got Kayfus's corner now.
Here is what I'm having trouble.
Gaddis' garbage can, or what do I got to figure out there now?
Here is what I'm having trouble understanding because I saw a bunch of people, you're not alone, certainly a bunch of people yesterday were tweeting at both of us that this was a vote loss. Mind you, I just looked and I saw that they won. So that surprised me when I woke up in the morning. So here's what I am having trouble understanding. If your thought was during the 10-game losing streak, if you called the radio station, if you argued with your friends, if you argued with us, if you're on the Reddit boards and your point of view was the Guardians were doing nothing to win. They weren't trying to win. And this was a damn shame. We were all frustrated. I mean, 100%, we were all frustrated. This sucks. And I think basically 100% of the offseasons going forward is going to suck for a Guardians fan. I don't think they're ever going to play in the same. They're not going to wade in the same pool that all these other teams. Mind you, the team they were playing last night has a $323 million payroll. They're playing the Mets. And you had a game that was very...
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Sloppy, but as Owen said, was awesome. Kind of had that feel. Kind of had a feel that game meant something.
That felt like a playoff atmosphere, and it felt like a playoff almost collapse there in the eighth as well. And then they bounced back, and they got some help from a bad fielding in the 10th inning.
Bunting's for winners, by the way.
Yeah.
That was a damn... That bunt was going to be successful one way or another. Right. They were going to advance the runners.
They were at least going to get Jose over to third.
So, hold on. Here's the bigger point that I'm making, Ken. Is if your point... Well, not you necessarily, but if your point was they're not trying to win, whatever. But then we're still going to, every game, put vote under the microscope and ask if this is a vote loss, if this is a vote loss. You know, right now, the Guardians have lost 55 games. It feels like... It's not like they've had... There are games where you just lose because your pitcher doesn't have it. They haven't had a lot of those. Their starting pitching's been really good. Has it not? Especially over the last, they've won all these series, you know, over the last month and a half.
Yeah, it's not been the guy that you thought it was, you know, everybody's dependent on Bibee, and it's not been Bibee. It's been Slade Ciccone.
They have piecemealed this thing together, and the pitching has acquitted itself as it usually does. When you have the one thing you can always have faith in for the Guardians is that in regular seasons, these the rotation is going to give you chances to win. So they have this disparity in payroll every game. They have, by all accounts, by the Guardians fans who were so frustrated, all these other teams have the payroll and have the talent over us. Then how are we going to call every loss a vote loss? Like, aren't we now prepared to say that this team has doesn't have the talent that all these other teams are going up against, but yet every game's a vote loss? What does vote have to work with then?
We did do the same
thing. We're all admitting the lineup stinks.
We did do the same thing last year when we asked what were vote losses and vote wins. Remember, you made me keep tally of that, and I actually did keep tally of that. The other part about Stephen Vogt is that I am pointing out that I know I said that at the beginning of the whole thing here, that he knows he does not have that talent of a ball club, so he has to push buttons and do some things that are different. However, at times, and because there's a lot of pressure on games against the Mets who have the $323 million payroll, there is a microscope on that because you're playing in front of a full crowd that everybody thinks is a postseason game, feels like a postseason game. And when there's times where there's postseason games, you're seeing a young manager maybe press a few more buttons than he really needs to and pull a few more levers and all the other analogies that I could think of. I don't think that that's breaking any news to anybody. I think a lot of people have already believed that at the very early part of Stephen Vogt's hopefully great career with the Cleveland Guardians, he tends to overmanage in certain spots.
They are overperforming, according to Baseball Reference. You look at their run differential.
Didn't
you
say
look
they were at a terrible
team. You look at their Pythagorean. Yep. Are you familiar with that?
I love
Pythagorean theorem.
Yes, the expected win-loss record based on the number of runs scored versus the number of runs yielded. They are overperforming. Yet, why does it feel like every time we're in a close game, vote cost them again? Like, you guys realize you can't hate the lineup and think it's the worst lineup in the history of baseball and then go after the manager every game.
Well, you're having a different conversation. I'm saying vote almost cost them this one. And you could poke holes in that. I didn't say a bunch of other ones. When they lost 10 in a row, I wasn't blaming them all on vote, now was I?
It feels like, I'm just telling you what it feels like in just gauging the sentiment every time they play any kind of a close game that they are in there. And people are frustrated with, well, he went to the wrong guy or he didn't put this guy in. And we've all shared in the frustration about the Manzardo situation. But they're 57 and 55. It feels like of the 55 losses, he's been blamed 50 times. And of the wins, we've had 50 almost losses.
I hate to tell you this.
You guys are acting like Vogt's the worst manager in the history of baseball.
Nobody's acting like Vogt's the worst manager in baseball.
But when you break it down the way I just did, it feels like every game, was that a vote loss? Was that a vote almost loss? Well, you guys tell me, how many? Where's the ledger? Do we need another column in the standings? Another vertical column? It's wins, losses, vote losses, and almost vote losses. Because I've heard all of that so far.
I think you welcome to trying to watch every single baseball game. I think that happens in a lot of cities.
So it just sounds like people don't have the stomach to realize that that baseball, there's 1,000 decisions.
Yeah.
And if in one of those decisions you disagree with, that's now an almost vote loss. That sounds so silly.
It does seem silly, but that's part of what goes on with being a Major League Baseball manager in any city. It doesn't matter the payroll.
And are you keeping track just the same of all the other managers they're going up against?
Yes, I was just about to use Aaron Boone as an example. Their season is falling apart, according to Yankees fans.
Do you feel better with Vogt than the Yankee fans feel with Boone?
I think I definitely think I do.
So now he's an advantage for us.
I don't know if he's an is he? Yes, of course Stephen Vogt's an advantage.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, it didn't sound like it. It hasn't sounded like it all year, to be honest, from the way people talk about Vogt.
It's
not sounded
people,
like
that's
an advantage
not me. That's
all
people.
Over.
That's not me. The guy you and I are having the conversation.
Yeah, the guy that won
There's
manager.
There's no fictitious audience out here booing you while you are talking about Stephen Vogt.
Yeah, the guy that won manager of the year last year is apparently being saddled with vote losses in games they won and almost losses in games they won and losses in games they didn't
lose. They won the game. They went out and they won the game.
do you see how silly this is? That's what I'm saying.
So I guess we can never ask about baseball then.
No, I didn't say that.
Well, if you question anything that's questioning Stephen Vogt to be silly, then we're never going to be able to.
Where are the Vogt almost wins? Why is he not?
I will keep track again if you want me to.
In close games that they lose, they would have gotten blown out if it weren't for Stephen Vogt.
We got even more to go. How could I be a football guy with football season coming around when you're turning me into Casey Stengel?
I just want to be consistent. That is all.
I will be as consistent as possible. I said one thing one time. The other thing is not playing Kyle Manzardo every day.
But I agree with you.
Okay, so when you it's interesting. When Lima agrees with me, well, then we're being totally fair to Stephen Vogt. But when he doesn't agree to me, how dare you guys question the defending manager of the year? How dare you people on Reddit?
I just would love to.
That I'm not having a conversation with him.
I want to get you on record. You are taking Hunter Gaddis out of the setup role.
I do not like pitching Hunter Gaddis against teams that are good. No, I don't.
So you just don't like seeing him at all then.
I don't have a lot of confidence in him. No, I don't.
Do you have another option other than Cade Smith two innings?
No, my other guys rather go to a casino. Allegedly.
Okay, so we got to nice do something.
Right? I got Doyle Brunson as a former closer.
Do you want Tyler Huntley to do the setups too? We can bring him in for that.
I mean, if you're not going to be throwing footballs, I usually, you know what? There's a lot of quarterbacks that usually are pretty good pitchers. Jameis Winston was a hell of a college pitcher.
Did other things in college too.
Played outfield.
Yeah. And there's another.
He played outfield.
A very specific thing.
People yell things on tables. All right, you ready for Kafis Corner, Mitch?
Oh, it's time. So we got to do this. This is important.
Set this up.
Yesterday, there was outrage
on this
very show that we had finally. We've been complaining throughout the season. When is the front office going to do what they need to do? The offense is inept. The lineup is inept. We've got to add some juice. Then every game, we're seeing what's Kafis doing in the minors. What's Kafis? My buddies, we're going to see him.
Yep.
They were loving him. Granted, same thing with DeLauder, but unfortunately, that's been taken out of play in Bizana. Well, the injury, obviously the setback earlier this year. So, Kafis was this new exciting thing that we had to monitor, and Owen said, flat out, we dropped the ball yesterday. Owen, right?
Correct, I did.
And you know what? I left the show thinking,
I'm not going
to argue with Owen.
I actually said that the front office dropped the ball. Because they waited 2 weeks too soon. That's why you guys didn't talk about them.
Yes. The craziness of Kafis.
If they wanted the Kafis crazies to be out there like I was, they should have done this in the beginning of July and not waited until August.
So all four of us decided, well, enough is enough. We are going to give, not just Owen, we are going to give the fans what they want, what they've been craving, what they've been salivating, what they've had a hankering for. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Kafis Corner.
Am I supposed to do something?
Do it.
Mitch, you will be breaking down CJ Kafis like never before. Like, you guys didn't even know you wanted this, but you did, and you are going to get it. You are going to get CJ Kafis.
Mitch, what did CJ Kafis do last night in the game?
CJ Kafis pinch ran for David Fry in the top of the 10th inning following bunts. David Fry's bunt that scored a run in the 10th inning. Advanced to third base on a ground ball, or on a flyout rather, that got the run in for the second one. And then, unfortunately, was not able to score on, surprise, surprise, a Nolan Jones pop-up.
Now, Mitch, I'm a little nervous here because this was the first airing of Kafis Corner. And you totally screwed up two of the situations.
He's nervous.
Involved in Kafis Corner.
So nervous.
Why did Kafis Corner have you? Oh, have you scrambling?
Like, I want to do more things with Kafis Corner, but we can't do it if it's like that.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture.
From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to do elements.
Yeah.
And sounds.
Yeah, a little bit of sound, jazz it up a little bit.
Maybe get the voice guy saying something about CJ Kafis.
We love a big
and
voice
his
guy.
Corner.
It completely validates a segment the minute you bring in a big voice guy. And Mitch, you know, there are going to be games where he has four at bats, five at bats.
We could do Chase the Lotter Corner. We'll do the theme song from Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. General Hospital.
Well, we've done that one before.
Or that year I told you about.
Can we do a Class A corner? Same game parlay. Hola, amigos. Beat the books.
We'll do offshore Class A.
For those just tuning in, that is a reference from the show. That is not anything having to do with...
Wow.
Where is the crit
just
girl?
Just get the theme song to Aces High from the show Casino.
Yes.
And move it on.
They get Rothstein in here. As he cycles through different jobs throughout the casino.
And I'm looking at him
each game, each night, you're Luis Ortizer.
Oh, yes. See, it's all coming to get Mitch. We're doing the work, man. This is going to be teed up. This is going to be so easy for you. Unless Nolan Jones is at the plate, and then we're going to be in trouble.
Hey, three times. Okay.
Good job, Mitch.
All right. That's day one of Kafis Corner. We'll see what happens.
He's playing all right.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Now the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
Over in Queens last night, the Cleveland Guardians getting the victory in extra innings over the New York Mets, one in which we had a first in a career for the Guardians last night. The first career save for reliever Nick Enright, in a special one in more ways than one, according to Guardians manager Stephen Vogt.
Nick's such a great kid, and what he's been through in his personal life, nothing's going to rattle him either. He's just been so great for us, so consistent. I'm just really happy for him and his family.
Now, for further context, Enright has been battling Hodgkin lymphoma since late 2022. He's expected to complete his treatments later on this year. So congratulations to you, Nick.
That was a really nice thing last night.
It's an amazing story.
That is really, really something.
It's one of those, I know Zach Meisel had written about it before, but you see it in a moment like that, and with the emotions that were running rampant after the game. Like, you don't typically hear about guys openly weeping, you know, just after a random regular season baseball game, and then you realize, oh yeah, there's a impressive backstory here that kind of tugs at the heartstrings.
I mean, to still do what he's doing, I think that's an exceptional thing. I think the story should be out there. I'm glad that Mitch is putting it in there. It's a very big thing. The season has been a little bit up, a little bit down, but these are one of the very, very, very nice things that are bigger than just baseball there. That's really good.
Going from that over to training camp yesterday, we had Shador Sanders on the podium, multiple Browns quarterbacks alongside him and Dylan Gabriel. Sanders was asked about the story that came out with his dad on Michael Irvin's show, I believe last week, talking about why he told his dad to not show up to Browns training camp. This was Shador Sanders' explanation.
I don't want him coming to see me right now because I want to get to where I want to go then for him to see me. I don't want him to come and see me, you know, get a couple reps and, you know, he's cheering like a good dad. Like, nah, you can't be proud of me right now. I got to get to where I'm going, and I know it's a lot I got to do to get there.
I'm not going to lie. There were times in my life where, as an athlete, I would want to, like, not have my dad be there, but I definitely wanted to work on a lot of stuff that I had in place before I wanted to have him be at the games for. You know what I mean?
Well, you were all Ohio in baseball.
I was, but I
was
wasn't all
Was your dad there
the
for
senior.
Those games?
He was there pretty much for all the games because he was the athletic director. But, yeah, I just want to make sure I had
forced
everything.
He's forced to watch your play. Now, Mitch does have a distinguished career. So this is what I do love about this situation with Shador is that when they took him, we did wonder, and I was part of the crowd wondering about the, quote, circus and the TV cameras, the film crews, you know, the shows that were going to be a part of this, and then featuring Browns players and Dion doing press conferences and mentioning his son. None of that has happened. That was a figment of my imagination. None of it's happened.
But, well, the two
it's
guys.
Early. It's very
well,
early.
I don't think you're ever going to. You might reach a point where it's like, okay, enough's enough if things are just asinine and you're like, why is he not out there? Maybe you'll reach that point. But a lot of the stuff that's been out there, I mean, it's usually been media-driven, media pundit-driven, one person putting an opinion out there. I mean, it's all been that. It's certainly not been Dion. It's certainly not been Shador. Shador said all the right things. Shador has said about the arm soreness yesterday. And everybody, well, he can't really have arm. Well, he just did a press conference yesterday talking about his arm being sore. You ain't going to call the guy a liar now, are you? If you say you're a big fan, you're certainly not going to call Shador Sanders a liar.
Oh, people were alleging some weird conspiracy.
I
that
had
made
him in my mentions.
That made no sense to me. What's the conspiracy? Normally with a conspiracy, there's a plot. There's supposed to be behind that plot, and other individuals are a part of that, the conspirators that are designed to do what? What were they designed to do?
I don't know.
How does that help the football team?
What that is, but I guess some fans just have it in their heads that no matter what happens, as long as he's not starting, that we are doing everything we can to poison the waters.
Who is the proxy, Ken?
The most desperate team in the NFL for a quarterback would somehow just on purpose.
So they're poisoning the water, and the water is turning the Browns what, Kenny?
I'm not talking about it. I'm not talking about frogs. I'm not giving you what you want. Not after the last segment.
I'll give you something to talk about. This is also from training camp yesterday. This is Jim Schwartz, the defensive coordinator, giving a lot of praise to cornerback Denzel Ward.
I've always admired Denzel as a player when I've been on other teams, and just the way he goes about doing his things is just impressive to see up close. I knew some guys that have coached him in the past that, you know, they said, like, you're going to love Denzel, and I certainly do. I've had some good corners in the past. He's probably the best corner I've had in 30-some years in the NFL.
Now, Schwartz's career includes cornerbacks Nnamdi Asamoah, Darius Slay, and Cortland Finnegan. He says 28. He's in Denzel Ward's the best out of all of them, 20 years old.
Man, I remember the Nnamdi, that stuff was like a two-year thing. He was built really up as like the best. Yep. Denzel has now done this for how long?
Cortland Finnegan, I think Cortland Finnegan was a fine player. He's just more for getting in fights with wide receivers.
Yeah.
That's all he's known for.
That's what people remember. I mean, he was good.
Denzel's better than both them guys.
I got to say.
And I like Darius Slay, too. Darius Slay's had a nice long career, but he's better than Darius
Slay. I think Denzel now, after year seven, so he's had 7 years. I have noticed that when people bring up the Browns, they always say Myles Garrett right away. And then they say Denzel Ward, like, right after. And I feel like he's finally getting the real... He's always gotten credit. He's always gotten respect. But he's really getting the top-of-the-league respect that we've always been saying. Come on, he's one of the best, if not the best. Does he have a case for the best corner in the game, Kenny?
I think he's one of the... I think he's one of the three best... Who would you say? Sauce Gardner, him.
Was he even that good last year?
No, I thought Sauce did have a little bit of a step back, but he's still in the top three. Sauce Gardner, him.
Patrick Surtain. He won Defensive Player of the Year last year, but almost seemed like there was a fractured vote.
Clearly.
All the way around. I don't know. Was he really the best defensive player? And somebody put up the quarterbacks that Denver went up against last year, and... Outside of Mahomes, there was a lot of pedestrian quarterbacks that they shut down. Denzel, number three in a ranking that came out from ESPN, Jeremy Fowler, when polling everybody. Surtain came in one. Derek Stingley Jr., the Texans, came in number two. And Denzel Ward, three. Trent McDuffie, four. Yeah, Sauce Gardner, five.
Derek Stingley Jr. is really good, too. Yeah. That's a name I forgot there. Go ahead.
That's it for About Last Night.
Outstanding.
A lot of the other guys have been phased out.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.